This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 5 years ago, an American-led invasion force coiled in Kuwait, awaiting orders to begin the invasion of Iraq. Think of some of the words and phrases that have taken on new meanings over that time. Shock and awe, fedayeen, spider hole, green zone, sectarian violence, IED, surge, civil war. 5 years ago, hundreds of reporters and technicians were embedded with American and British troops, while a handful awaited them in Baghdad. As we approach the anniversary of the invasion, we've gathered four reporters who've been deeply engaged in covering the war. In a moment, we'll hear from NPR senior foreign correspondent Ann Garrels and NPR senior news analyst Ted Koppel. Later in the program, we'll be joined by John Burns of the New York Times and Hoda Abdelhamid of Al Jazeera. If you'd like to talk with them about what they've seen and heard, about the way the story's changed, about the stories they can cover and the stories they can't, our number in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we'll begin with Ann Garrels, who joins us today from Istanbul in Turkey. And Annie, it's always a pleasure to welcome you back to Talk of the Nation.
And delighted to talk to you, Neil.
And 5 years later, what would you say to that younger self who was arguing with her editors that she really needed to stay in Baghdad?
Well, you know, we all thought it was pretty dodgy to stay in Baghdad during the bombing. But of course, as we all know, that was sort of chicken feed compared to what we've all seen since. The bombing was very accurate for the most part, and Saddam's people didn't threaten us, as it turned out. The ensuing 5 years have gotten worse and worse and worse. We've moved houses. You can see how bad it's gotten by how much more security we have to have, our limited movements. And even with the surge, it's still very dangerous.
Very dangerous. Can you go out to have a meal, to get your hair cut, to do anything in Baghdad?
No, not at all. I mean, I can go out and do interviews, but I mean, basically the so-called 10-minute rule, you don't spend on the streets in an open place anymore, if you can help it, than 10 minutes. I asked my staff not long ago, because it's an issue. I mean, it is better because of the surge. There's no question. But it's not hugely better, and certainly not for foreigners, because there's a huge price tag on our heads. And it's not so much any longer from Al-Qaeda. You know, I'm not going to be probably in an orange jumpsuit and lose my head on a video, but I'm worth money. And crime is a huge problem. And so, you know, my translators and Iraqi friends said to me, well, you know, if 6 months ago you'd have been kidnapped, if you'd walked the streets, gone to the hairdresser, as you suggest, gone to a restaurant, if you would have been kidnapped in 30 minutes, we'll give you an hour, maybe 50 minutes to an hour now.
That's not much of a change, I suspect.
Not for foreigners living in Baghdad, no.
Before the war began, Ted Koppel, then the anchor of ABC News Nightline, was embedded with the 3rd Infantry Division during Operation Iraqi Freedom in April 2003.
Elements of the division's 2nd Brigade were deployed on the west bank of the Euphrates on the outskirts of Al-Hindliya. Their purpose was to draw fire, and they did.
We've had a number of vehicles hit by RPGs. We took a small arms fire.
How does it look?
Don't worry about it, you're gonna be okay.
What was it?
Well, in Iraqi, obviously. Ricochet?
You just got yourself a purple heart.
My mom's not gonna wanna watch this.
Ted Koppel crossing the Euphrates with the 3rd Infantry Division in 2003. Ted Koppel is now the managing editor of the Discovery Channel and a senior news analyst here for NPR News, and he joins us here today in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Neil.
And like Annie, you've been to Iraq before the war, and why did you decide this was voluntary for you? You were not drafted to go. Why did you decide to make that dangerous trip to Baghdad?
I guess because I've covered a lot of wars over the last 40 years in this business. Vietnam was the first of them. That was back in 1967. And I really felt that I had something that I could bring to coverage of a war that my younger colleagues don't have, and that is experience. I'm glad I did it. I am very glad, and I'm in awe and admiration of our colleague Ann Garrels, who has spent so much time, and John Burns, who will be joining us a little later, who have spent so much time in Iraq these last few years. Those first few weeks, we didn't know it at the time, of course, but those first few weeks were really very easy by comparison with everything that has come since. Although the disillusionment came very quickly.
When did you first notice it?
The second day in Iraq, the commander of the 3rd Infantry Division had told me in a conversation, and this was one of those glorious assignments where there was only one other reporter with the command of the 3rd Infantry Division. That was Michael Kelly, who died a few days later, just before we got to Baghdad. And Michael and I were the only two reporters with this unit. And so we had tremendous access. We were in on the intelligence briefings. We knew what was anticipated. We knew what was expected the next day. And on this one evening, I remember sitting out there with the general, a major general commanding the 3rd ID, and he was telling me, you know, tomorrow you really want to bring your cameras out early because we're going to be crossing into Nasiriyah. And the CIA has informed us that we can expect to be greeted at the bridge by the mayor and a band, and they're going to have flowers, and we are going to be embraced as we come into Nasiriyah. So there we were the next morning with that camera. Suffice it to say, there was no band, no mayor, no flowers, no welcome. Quite the contrary.
A couple of RPGs.
Yeah. A couple of RPGs here and there. And I had actually been in Baghdad the previous December, 4 months earlier. We had seen coming in from Kuwait, we'd made the drive up from Kuwait, hundreds upon hundreds of these white flatbed trucks, these small trucks. We had no idea what it was that Saddam was going to do with those trucks. Well, that first day in Nasiriyah, we found out. The Fedayeen had mounted 50 caliber machine guns on the beds of those trucks and came driving toward the U.S. units as fast as they could. And these were the first of the suicide missions that would become so familiar.
I want to play another piece of tape now. This is Ann Garrels shortly after U.S. forces arrived in Baghdad in the early part of the war.
People are still very scared. Mm-hmm. They're very scared by the vacuum of power. The Marines are dotted around, but there's no police force. There's none of the security they've grown up with and been used to. They don't know what to expect tomorrow. The looting really upset a lot of people that we saw today. And people are now worried that they're going to be revenge killings, that things could get way out of control. They don't think it's over.
And Annie, people listen to that and they say, wow, even then she knew.
Well, I think, frankly, I mean, as Ted said, it was pretty clear very quickly that nothing was going to happen as anticipated. Iraqis all along worried about the aftermath. You know, as one Iraqi said to me as the Americans came in, he stood next to me and he said, "You understand, we're going to resent you every step of the way, and you're going to have to be in complete control, complete control." Well, of course, the Americans were never in complete control. That was the tragedy of the invasion. And the resentment just got greater because Iraqis looked around and said, our lives are getting worse. Mm. And wait a minute, this is the great power. And many Iraqis thought, they're deliberately sort of screwing with us. America can't be that incompetent. And that's been a theme in many Iraqis' minds for a long time.
Ann Garrels, also with us, Ted Koppel. We're talking this hour about coverage of the war in Iraq from the invasion to the surge. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Al. Al calling us from Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, thank you. I just heard Ann Garrels make the comment that the surge is responsible for the decrease in violence. Yet I've heard other reporting on NPR and on other sources saying that perhaps the greater contributing source for the decrease in violence are things like Muqtada al-Sadr agreeing to have his forces stand down in a couple different ceasefires, financial deals we've made with perhaps ex-insurgents to no longer fight the American forces but to fight with us now. Tenuous financial deals, in my understanding. Can your guest comment on that? Is it truly the surge? Is it these other sources? It seems to me where there was some perhaps skepticism that the surge was the source of the decrease in violence before, it seems that the pendulum has shifted on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay, Al, thanks for the call. Annie?
Well, I think the caller is absolutely right in that there are a lot of factors, but you really couldn't have had the pressure on Sadr, the work that's been done with the Sunnis to bring the awakening, to encourage them, to bring them into the help, bring them into the process. Although that's still far from clear, the Shiites will bring them into the process. You couldn't have had it if you had not had more troops blanketing Baghdad, bringing an end, not entirely, but at least reversing in some ways the spiraling sectarian violence that was going on in the city. I mean, it's by no means perfect, but it is a lot better. And so you've had an opportunity to begin some dialogue between Sunnis and Shiites. But it has not provided or it has not resulted in what the U.S. hoped, which would be efforts at the upper government levels to have reconciliation efforts. The government itself has really failed to step up on this.
NPR senior foreign correspondent Ann Garrels. Also with us is NPR senior news analyst Ted Koppel. In a moment, we'll be joined by John Burns of The New York Times. We're talking about covering Iraq from the invasion to the siege. 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join the conversation, email is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. War reporting is always hard and sometimes dangerous work. The war in Iraq is about to enter its sixth year. We're talking with some of the journalists who covered the story since the beginning. We're joined by two of NPR's most experienced reporters, senior foreign correspondent Ann Garrels and news analyst Ted Koppel. We're taking your questions for them. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. John Burns, a foreign correspondent for The New York Times, went to Iraq in 2002. He was there until late last year when he moved to England to start his new job as London bureau chief for The New York Times. In 2005, NPR's Madeline Brand asked him about what he called the fog of misunderstanding surrounding the U.S. military.
The United States came here knowing far too little about Iraq. It still knows far too little. Part of that is simply a question of the cultural gulf. Part of it is because of the nature of the society itself, as it was engendered by Saddam Hussein, which conspires against the acquisition of fact. These are very often, for Americans and for outsiders, and indeed for Iraqis themselves, the shadowlands. It's a place where fact is exceptionally difficult to distinguish from fiction.
John Burns joins us now from the studios of the BBC in London. It's good to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure.
It seems incredible for those on the outside to think that that fog of misunderstanding could have existed for so long. Do you believe it still exists?
Well, I think the United States military describes itself as a learning army. They have a very effective system called Lessons Learned, and I think you could say that the United States has come a very long way since those early days that Annie and Ted were describing, and has learned some very hard lessons along the way. But it seems to me that the least we have to say from what we've seen over the past 9 months or so is that a strategy was adopted at the time of the surge, which has turned things around in combination with other factors that you've already discussed, the tribal awakening, the ceasefire by Muqtada al-Sadr, and by almost every measure that one can take, things seem to be better now than they were a year ago. Not, as Annie said, much better in terms of political reconciliation at the top, but I think there was a shift, a feeling that instead of trying to work reconciliation from the top down, work it from the bottom up. And, of course, the test of that will come as the surge draws down through the spring into the summer, and we may have a clearer picture of where things are going by the fall.
Let me ask you, how frustrating was it to work in Baghdad when, as Annie described, movement was so limited, access was so limited?
Well, I wouldn't describe it as frustrating. You know, almost in every line of professional endeavor, you face obstacles. Your success, whether you're a surgeon, a policeman, or a newspaper reporter, is largely, I think, a function of how effective you are in working your way around problems and difficulties. The problems and obstacles in Baghdad were very considerable. The violence was a major inhibition, but there were workarounds. A lot of it had to do with the willingness of the media organization you worked for and the ability to provide the resources to protect you. At the New York Times, we were very well protected, have been very well protected, and I like to think that there's nothing really crucial about this war that you wouldn't know if you had been a regular reader of our newspaper over the past 5 years, and I don't claim that as an exclusive accomplishment of the New York Times, NPR, several other American newspapers. I could give you quite a list. Have dedicated themselves to covering this war effectively, and I think have done so despite the problems that Annie has described.
Annie, let me ask you to follow up on that, but also, has the press corps dwindled in Iraq? Is it now smaller due to the, well, fabulous expense involved with keeping reporters there?
Of that, there's no question. You know, there are almost no Europeans, no Asians. Initially, there were Japanese reporters because there were Japanese troops there. None of them are there any longer, and the Americans are drawing down. It's almost impossible for freelancers to come in and work in Iraq except embedded with the military, because they just don't have the ability to secure themselves. I mean, as John said, it's been a huge commitment by the American news organizations who've committed to be in Baghdad and to provide us with the security to, as he puts it very eloquently, to sort of, you know, get around the problems. And I think that despite all of the problems, we have been able to give a remarkably accurate picture. It's not to say we can go everywhere. It's not to say we, you know, can get all the information we want. But I think that we did track it pretty accurately.
Let's go to Jay. Jay's calling us from Prescott, Arizona.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A lot of friends, more towards the conservative side of the spectrum, who truly believe that there are a lot of really good and productive things happening that are not being reported in the popular media. I wonder if you could comment on that, and I'd like to just take that off the air.
Okay, Jay, thanks very much for the call. And I'm not sure who to put that to either. Well, Ted Koppel, you've been here not in Iraq, but as a consumer of the media reporting from Iraq largely for the past couple of years anyway. What do you think?
I think, by and large, I mean, certainly if you simply take my two colleagues who are also on this program tonight or this afternoon, if you've been listening to Annie Garrels and you've been reading John Burns, I think you've been getting an extraordinarily accurate picture of what is going on. I think what we have lost a little sight of, and perhaps the fifth anniversary of the invasion is not a bad time to raise it, is whether this was an intelligent foreign policy decision in the first place. You know, I'm reminded of the fact that for 8 long and bitter years, Iraq and Iran were in a bloody war in which the United States somewhat surreptitiously supported Iraq precisely because it was concerned about Iran becoming major dominant power in the Persian Gulf. And here we are 5 years later, having, yes, succeeded in getting rid of Saddam Hussein. But Iran, if anything, I think has acquired more influence in the region than before. And Iraq is on the verge of becoming a basket case. And if indeed the United States were to pull all of its troops out precipitously, I think things in the Persian Gulf might become even more chaotic than they are right now, and we might even be looking back on $104 for a barrel of oil with some wistfulness.
John Burns, I wondered if you wanted to weigh in on that.
You know, I think Ted would probably agree that in coverage of all wars, certainly all modern wars, we would have to, if you will, accept that our instinct in covering the big, if you will, public issues has very often left undercovered or underreported another side of the war, that is the positive side. Let me explain what I mean by that. Wars certainly, as we all know, are a theater for the worst instincts in human nature, but they are also very often a theater for the best instincts. And I think that if we could revisit everything we've done, we might want to spend a little bit more time reporting, I'm thinking first of the Iraqi people, the extraordinary courage and resolution and bravery that ordinary Iraqis have shown through the conflict, and the United States military. We've reported very fully on what's gone wrong in terms of military strategy, what's gone right as well. But I think what we haven't reported on perhaps quite enough, and certainly the average U.S. soldier in Iraq would probably agree with this, is the manifold, uncountable, small good things that American troops in Iraq have done, along with the atrocities which have been reported, along with what happened at Abu Ghraib and at Haditha and elsewhere. And I think many, many Iraqis would agree with this, that on an individual basis, American soldiers overwhelmingly have attempted to do good in Iraq and have, in many cases, in a personal manner, have accomplished that.
Here's an email from Christine in Sacramento. I was appalled at the beginning of the invasion that U.S. news teams were not only willing but seemed thrilled to be embedded with U.S. troops. Whatever happened to objective journalism? Do any of the guests and to those who were embedded now think it was a mistake to allow themselves to be embedded with troops? Do they not think now they were used by the administration to help pump up support at home for the invasion? And Ted Koppel, I throw that to you.
Sure. Since I was embedded, I guess that one's directed at me. I have to tell you, maybe it's just sheer cowardice, but I cannot imagine having covered that first wave of the war in any other fashion. Now, we did, while we were embedded, we ran in on one occasion to a group of, I think, Israeli and Italian reporters who were in a car by themselves trying to make it through the desert. This was sandstorm season, and you may even remember that during that earliest part of the invasion got stuck for about 3 days in the desert because of the sandstorms. I think I have no regrets about having been embedded. I have no regrets about whatever warm feelings I had toward the men and women who were protecting me as we were making our way from Kuwait up to Baghdad. I don't think it should be a permanent condition. But I must tell you, as someone who covered the war in Vietnam 40 years ago, where embedding was not a term that we were familiar with, it was natural that we would tend to spend much of our time with U.S. units. We were free to leave at any time, just as I was free to leave at any time in Iraq.
And Garrels, it is a system that has been maintained to the present day.
Absolutely. You know, the military is an important part, you know, of this war. And to live with them, to watch them, and being, you know, embedding, they can't hide a lot. I mean, I think it has been a very profitable experience for journalists. You know, sometimes you don't get to the unit you want when you want to. I mean, the military can manipulate things in that regard, but once you're with them, you're out there and you see everything up close and personal, as the good, the bad, and certainly given the security concerns, I mean, no, there are places in Iraq I simply cannot go unless I go with the military.
We're speaking with three reporters who've covered Iraq from the beginning. Just heard Anne Garrels, who's with us today from NPR's office in Istanbul. Also with us from London is John Burns, now the London bureau chief for the New York Times in Baghdad for many years for the New York Times. And with us here in Studio 3A is Ted Koppel, then at the beginning of the war, anchor for ABC News Nightline, now the managing editor of the Discover Channel and a senior news analyst here at NPR News. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email us talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. And let's go to Nathaniel. Nathaniel with us from Chicago.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is for Mr. Koppel. I'm wondering how his experience covering the Iraq War has been similar to or different from the experience of covering the war in Vietnam or a conflict in Vietnam. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Nathaniel.
In many respects, Nathaniel, it was very much the same in the sense that I think people over the past 40 years have gotten the impression that the relationship between the military and the media, the military and the press in Vietnam was awful. It was awful between the media and people from colonels on up. It was a terrific relationship with the guys on the ground, with the so-called grunts. And the fact of the matter is that I think we had tremendous access in those days. We're free to cover, as Annie says, the good and the bad, and did. And what ultimately led to that great fissure, that great split, I think, between the Johnson administration at first and then the Nixon administration and the media, is that we were reporting precisely what was happening in spite of the fact that we were with the military. Just as today, the good and the bad is being reported by the men and women who are sometimes embedded with and sometimes go out on their own. I think you have to look at the overall coverage. And by and large, there has been some brilliant coverage. There's been a lot of mediocre coverage. But by and large, I think the American public got the story in Vietnam and has gotten the story out of Iraq, too.
John Burns, let me ask you, as you now sit back and get some perspective on your experiences covering the war from Baghdad, what lessons do you take away if you were, you know, managing editor of the New York Times for the next conflict? Of course, it would be different, but what lessons would you hope to apply?
Well, I guess it's easier for me to answer in terms of the lessons that I would hope that I'd learnt for myself. The media have been, and quite understandably and necessarily, highly critical of the administration's failure to prepare adequately for what followed the capture of Baghdad in April of 2003. I think we've been a little bit less forthright in reporting on some of our own failings in that respect, and here I include myself. I think that we covered very effectively before the fall of Saddam just what a nasty place that was. I had spent a great deal of my life reporting on very nasty places and saving North Korea, about which we know rather little. Iraq was the nastiest of all those places. In other words, we wrote a great deal about the human rights abuses. I think what I would want to do, if I was to do it over again, was to look beneath, peer beneath that carapace of terror and see if I could understand better the society that lay beneath it, the effects of that terror on the psyche of the Iraqi people and the historic fissures in that society. In other words, what was going to happen? What were we going to find when we lifted that rock? It was difficult because we were very constrained by Saddam. To put it in a nutshell, I think that if I were to do it over again, I think some of my colleagues would agree with this, I think that we'd still write about the human rights abuses, but we'd perhaps pay a little bit more attention to that equally important H, and that is history.
You once said fairly early on in the war that despite the danger of being in Baghdad, you felt lucky to wake up every morning and cover such a story. Would you feel that way if you got a call tomorrow and said you're going back to Baghdad?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, you show me a reporter who doesn't want to be where the news is, where the sharp end is, the story that carries you onto page one. I hesitate to say this because it can so easily be misunderstood, but there's a tremendous exhilaration about covering war. It is, of course, a tragic and miserable experience in other ways, but as a reporter, there are few experiences to equal it. And I think Ted and I, of roughly the same generation, would probably agree that it was a privilege. He, 35, 40 years after Vietnam, and myself, when I was well into my 50s, to have the opportunity to be at the heart of this story.
John Burns, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
John Burns, former Baghdad bureau chief for the New York Times, now London bureau chief for that newspaper, with us from the BBC studios in London. Ted Koppel and Ann Garrels will stay with us when we come back. Hoda Abdelhamid, who started covering the war for ABC, is now working for Al Jazeera, will be our guest as well. You join us, too. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking with reporters who've covered the Iraq war for the past 5 years, how the story itself has changed, how reporting has changed. We're talking with NPR senior foreign correspondent Ann Garrels and NPR senior news analyst Ted Koppel. And joining us now is Hoda Abdelhamid, who covered the war in Iraq for ABC News, where she worked as a producer. More recently, though, for Al Jazeera English, where she's a correspondent. She covered Iraq for the past 5 years. She joins us now by phone from Doha in Qatar. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Pleasure.
And you've been to Iraq many times, I guess going back to 1998 in Operation Desert Fox. What's different now? What's changed over all that time?
Well, I think like Annie said, first of all, it's been extremely difficult to be able to go out and get the story. And I think it has, whether you're a Western journalist or an Arab journalist, the security situation is exactly the same. There'll always be someone who wants to get you. So it's been extremely difficult in that matter. It is somehow easier if you reach the story to get out of people what they think and how they feel, because under Saddam they would just reply the usual slogans that they were there for Saddam and they supported Saddam. So once you get there, you probably get more out of it. But to get there, it just takes a lot of planning and a lot of precautions.
One of the things that has really changed about the media, well, certainly since 1998, is the availability of Arab media, independent Arab media, broadcasting not just to the Arab world, but more and more now, certainly in your case with Al Jazeera English, to the rest of the world.
Yes, indeed. And I think it's quite interesting because we're also able to give the story from the... to interpret the story or the how Iraqis feel just a bit better because we speak the language and we know the culture, so we can reflect that a bit. While I was at ABC, although, I mean, I was very thrilled with all the coverage, I sometimes grew frustrated because I thought there was a cultural gap here and it wasn't so easy to understand for the American audience what was going on.
I guess listeners would want to ask, are your efforts skewed in one way by working for ABC or skewed another way by working for Al Jazeera?
Well, I don't think there's much difference. I mean, Al Jazeera English is a quite global channel that just covers every part of the world, and there is some differences that go on with Al Jazeera Arabic that is probably more targeted to the Middle Eastern audience who knows every single detail of the Iraq story. The difference would be that I think that at a certain point, American News Network was not very interested in continuously covering the Iraq story. Rather, there was the milestones that they covered heavily, sending in the big reporters and putting all the means in. And then there was just the daily news and the daily life of Iraqis that was not reported too much.
Ann Garrels, let me ask you, obviously in Baghdad, in Iraq, people there have been able to get media, Arab media now, since the end of the war. How has that changed things?
Well, the big thing, of course, in Iraq is that, I mean, the first thing that happened with the fall of Saddam was that everyone got satellite dishes. I mean, literally, I mean, they didn't know what was going on around them. But somehow, miraculously, satellite dishes arrived. And within days, literally, they had access to information from Al Jazeera, Arabiya, the BBC, so that people are indeed much better informed. They have internet in their homes. There was almost no internet. There are cell phones, so communication in general is much improved, and they have a choice of what they listen to and what they watch.
Let's get another caller in. This is Mustafa. Mustafa with us from San Francisco.
Hi. I have a question for American journalists here, because I speak French and Arabic. I happen to be from Morocco, and they followed the war news through both the French news, the American news, and Al Jazeera. And they found out that the American news have actually removed the graphics, and they present it more as a show compared to, like, the French news, for example, they would show the war as is. Like, the TV audience will take it as is, and they will leave it to them to make a judgment.
By you saying more graphic, do you mean more blood, to put it bluntly?
Whatever the war is, whatever that whatever happens on the grounds of the war are not covered literally on the media. American, I was pretty disappointed in NPR, like, other than like Frontline on CBS, which is usually like months after the fact, we not mobilize the people, we not give them a sense of what's going on the ground. Mm. Like, when American soldiers die for a reason, whatever the reason is, and we need to actually like know how they died and why they died, we pretty much just say, well, these guys have died for a cause. We appreciate the cause, we appreciate the fight for freedom, but they kind of shield the American audience from the reality of what's going on the ground.
I think, if before you let Mustafa go, I think, Neil, that he was talking about the graphics on American television, that we have a tendency to make it almost more entertainment-oriented than substance-oriented. Is that right, Mustafa?
I do not mean it to be entertaining. I meant it to be to show the reality of what is. Because a lot of people think of going to war as like a word that is empty of what the results of war are.
No, I think he was talking about blood.
I think you were. Okay, I stand corrected. And indeed, I got into an argument with my ABC colleague at the time, Charlie Gibson, who was an old and dear friend, because I believed that we needed to show more of the graphic consequences of war, to show the dead, to show the wounded. And Charlie disagreed with me on that one. I'm afraid that sometimes we make war altogether too appealing on American television. I think that's one of the reasons why we get into them so easily.
Hoda Abdelhamid, is that one of the differences between American media and where you're working now, for example, Al Jazeera?
Certainly, and I have to say that when I was working at ABC during the war, my job was actually to monitor Arab media. And I was in the London Bureau, and I was in a room with all the Arab channels on, and I remember walking into the newsroom, and it just was a completely different war going on, whether it was on the British channels or the American channels. It was much more, as Ted said, I think it was more heroic. It was more of a big show rather than what was shown on Arabic TV. It was already some people's misery, some death and destruction, some happiness and some anger, depending on the situation. So it was really two completely different wars that reached these two audiences.
Mustafa, thanks for the call. Let's go now to, this is Jennifer. Jennifer with us in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah, hi. I just want to first thank Ms. Gerald and Mr. Koppel. They're just fantastic, and I have so much respect for both of you. I guess, I kind of touching on the last caller, I feel like, you know, instead of seeing bombings that kill 50 people or crashes on the front page, it's on page 5 now. And so I think the coverage that we're getting is, you know, it's not the bleak picture the White House always complains about, where you aren't showing the good things. It just seems like it's kind of fading into the, you know, the foreground. And the other question I had was, it seems like you do have some access when you're embedded, and yet we never see coffins coming off the planes at, you know, Andrews Air Force Base with flags. I think there's a lot of access that the administration has not given the American people either. And that's just my comment, last question. Thank you.
Okay, and the last part relates to policy here at home, but
yes.
I'll ask Ann Garrels. I don't think the Iraq War is off the front page for National Public Radio news, but is that making, as you look at other reporters there, is this making a difference that it isn't so much page one anymore?
Oh, absolutely. The networks are cutting back. They're staffing. Not NPR, I will say. But the television networks are cutting back their coverage dramatically and have my TV colleagues are enormously frustrated, those that are still there. Politics are taking over. We have more time. I mean, you know, a half-hour news program at night doesn't give you much latitude.
Hoda Abdel
Hamid, if you're with TV.
Yeah. Hoda Abdel Hamid, the Iraq War is still front-page news on Al Jazeera?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, at the moment, Al Jazeera English is only about a year old, but we're actually expanding our operation and our coverage of Iraq. We also have a weekly show called Inside Iraq, which covers all what happened in Iraq during the week. But on a daily basis, it is definitely one of the top stories.
Thanks very much. And Jennifer, thanks very much for the call. Here's an email we have from Jill in Cherry, Minnesota. I express my profound gratitude to all your guests, especially Ann Garrels, for their dedicated service. My question would be, with the amount of time spent together and the heightened level of emotion that must be caused by the enormous stress of the situation on the soldiers, citizens, and yourselves, how do you keep any kind of professional distance? Ann Garrels, I guess that's to you at first, but I'd like the others to answer that as well.
Well, you know, holding a microphone out gives you a funny kind of distance. I mean, it's a silly story perhaps, but I was covering something years ago in Russia, and the man was horribly injured, and I thought I was going to throw up or faint. But I had the microphone in front of me, and I had to get it right. I had to get the facts, and that sort of gives you some sort of distance. And I've got wonderful editors who have, you know, talk you through the stories. And I've got a fantastic husband. Mm. You know, that makes a huge difference. I mean, if I was maybe 28 years old and I didn't have a family and I wasn't as, you know, old as I am now, I don't know if I'd have handled it as well.
Hoda Abdel Hamid, let me ask you how you keep your distance.
Well, I usually actually, you're so busy while you're doing your job and you're so worried about your security and you're so worried about making sure you're within that 10-minute rule Annie was talking about, that I actually never realize while I'm there what's going on. And it's usually after I've left Iraq and I went back home and I relax that it sort of all hits me about what I've seen or in which situation I've put myself in. Mm. And sometimes it's difficult to deal with, and sometimes it's also difficult to understand why you put yourself in such a situation. But while you're there, you just... I guess you also feel that your life is much better than the person you're interviewing, so it's all quite relative while you're there.
And Ted?
Well, as always, Winston Churchill had the most trenchant observation about that kind of thing. He said, there is no experience quite so exhilarating as being shot at and missed. I remember in Vietnam, I had a dear friend by the name of Keith Kay, who was a cameraman, seeing Keith one time standing in the middle of a runway while it was being mortared by the Viet Cong. And they walked the mortars, which is to say they would fire at a point, let's say, 100 yards away and then 50 yards away. And the mortars kept coming closer to Keith, and when it was all over, I was curled up in a ditch while all of this was going on. When it was all over, I said, have you lost your bleeping mind? And he said, you know something, when I'm looking through that eyepiece, I'm watching it on film. I don't feel as though I'm actually there. And I think to a certain extent that's how all of us feel when we're out covering war. Because we're there in a professional capacity, it's almost as though you're watching it after the fact. And you're able to disassociate yourself from it far more than you might think.
Ted Koppel, Ann Garrels, and Hoda Abdel Hamid, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get one more caller in. This is Evie. Evie with us from Boise, Idaho, where she's been extremely patient on the line. Go ahead. I'm sorry to keep you there so long, Evie.
That's all right. God bless everybody who does reporting, embedded or not. What do any of the three of you think or that we as Americans can do to extricate ourselves from Iraq and not screw over the Iraqi people any more than we already have?
Ann Garrels, we'll throw that to you first.
Well, I think one of the things that the danger is that we're all looking back now at the, especially in the political campaign, at, you know, the mistakes that were made in getting into the war and the way it was initially conducted. You know, and I think that's all terribly important to look at. But whether you agreed with the war or not, you raise the best question of all is, okay, now put that behind us. Let's make the best decisions possible at this point. Let's not keep fighting, you know, whether we should have been there in the first place or not. As you point out, you know, there a lot is now at stake for America, for Iraqis. And I hope that, you know, people just, Americans are not short-sighted and impatient with whatever decisions they make.
Hoda Abdelhamid?
Well, I think that during this year, during the election year, I think all this conversation about troops drawback is having some sort of a negative effect in Iraq, in the sense that there is need for national reconciliation, but politicians don't trust each other, all the different parties don't trust each other, and a lot of people are also taking their precautions as to what will happen after these troops draw back. And I think the more you talk about it, the less people back in Iraq are willing to commit themselves to take any kind of decision. And I think the more we drag into this election year, the more you find that
absolutely
things are slowing down.
And Ted Koppel, we'll give you the last word on this.
Well, I agree entirely with what Hoda just said. We didn't really get into it because of the terrorists who were in Iraq. They were not actually there at the time. We didn't get into it because of Saddam Hussein's miserable human rights record. He had the same miserable human rights record when the United States was supporting him in the war against Iran. We got into it because we thought our national interest was engaged. Our national interest is still engaged, and if we pull out too soon, and if we allow that country and that region to deteriorate into anarchy, we will regret it for many, many years to come. I'm afraid for good or ill, we're in, and we're in for the long term, maybe not with 135 or 150,000 troops, but you're going to see a few tens of thousands of American troops there for a long time to come.
Evie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And our thanks to our guests. You just heard Ted Koppel, a managing editor of the Discover Channel, anchored ABC's Nightline for many years. He's also a senior news analyst here at NPR, and he was with us in Studio 3A. John Burns of the New York Times is with us from London. Ann Garrels, NPR senior foreign correspondent, joined us today from NPR's office in Istanbul. And Hoda Abdelhamid from Al Jazeera with us from Doha. This is NPR News.